Life can feel overwhelming, but you don't have to go through it alone. On my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, I share openly and vulnerably about everything life brings us and what we can learn by living with our hearts a little bit more open. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on self-care, motherhood, healing, and more. You are enough, just the way you are. This podcast is a reminder of that. Follow and listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
Faces a choice. This is Battleground America. Here's Tara Servatius.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Insane Things Podcast. Breaking, an hour ago, as I record this podcast, another stunning fraud figure. Folks, I drop now, every day that I'm on the air, 5 days a week, a new, different, stunning fraud figure. Why? Because as Elon Musk told Joe Rogan months ago, remember when Rogan said, yeah, it's a shame you disbanded Doge. Musk said, no, he didn't. It's still operating, just kind of in the background, on the down low. You can see what's happening. I could do the rest of the Insane Things podcast today on the week's fraud figures, and it would consume the whole thing. So I'm just going to go with the most recent that just broke. Might want to sit down. If you're in your car, you might want to pull over. Here's Maria Bartiromo with Fox Business, who broke it, y'all.
Today, a new spotlight on fraud plaguing all sectors of America and the economy. The Small Business Administration suspending nearly 28,000 loan borrowers in Ohio. Those borrowers connected to the $1.1 billion in suspected pandemic-era fraud from the PPP program. Remember that? Along with COVID economic injury disaster loan activity. Now, the SBA has been going state by state to identify and take action against these potentially fraudulent borrowers.
Hold on a minute. You're thinking, did I hear that right? You did. 27,000, nearly 28,000 borrowers who defrauded the government just in Ohio. That's $1.1 billion just in that state, just in that one program. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent put it this way. And folks, this kind of gives you a hint at what they're looking at behind the scenes.
The GAO numbers, not my numbers, believe that there's about $500 billion a year of fraud. So could we very quickly get $250 billion of that? That would reduce the deficit substantially.
$500 billion in fraud a year. Well, exactly, by the way, what Elon Musk predicted in the first months of Doge. Republicans are just now discovering it inside the Trump administration, but it's clear the Democrats knew all about it. Listen to SBA head Kelly Loeffler. She's the one who was on about the, again, I can't believe it, 27,000 individual borrowers who defrauded the government in Ohio alone. But the Biden administration knew, she said. They just didn't do anything about it. What does that mean to me? It's their friends who are behind it. It's people on their side who are behind it, and they know that damn well.
Well, Maria, if you remember, under COVID, $1.2 trillion in PPP and EIDL loans went out. And yeah, it was estimated by the Biden era Office of Inspector General that $200 billion was fraudulent. And then the Biden administration proceeded to sweep that under the rug and try to forget about it and make hardworking taxpayers forgive criminal activity.
Later in the interview, she said 6,900 people defrauded the Small Business Administration for $400 million in Minnesota alone. But folks, the key to healing this country and stopping the mass defrauding of the American people at the point of a gun, ultimately wielded by the IRS, is figuring out who's taking it and what routes does the money travel. I've always suspected it was Democrat Party members looting the Treasury. We got our first look at that this week in a super important article that most people missed by John Solomon at Just the News. Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Lee Zeldin, love that guy, says he's made several criminal referrals in the last week. Listen to this. After uncovering a major political enrichment scandal that routed billions in Biden-era energy grants, green energy grants, to Democrat cronies. It was about self-dealing, Zeldin said. He said he's canceled or stopped about $29 billion in EPA grants, including the famous one for $2 billion to a nonprofit tied to longtime Georgia Democrat Stacey Abrams, the woman who, remember, she had that NGO and she'd never run more than $200 through it. She got $2 billion. Remember, they made her take a course on how to do accounting and money management? Yeah, and then infused her nonprofit with $2 billion. Yeah, well, Zeldin tells Just the News that he has unmasked a series of pass-through groups used to route taxpayer money to the politically connected, and they're not Republicans. Shock. Quote, as you look through all these pass-through entities, you're seeing so many connections to former Obama and Biden administration officials and Democrat donors, people who were former cabinet members and other high-ranking administration officials. So, folks, if you're thinking, I kind of remember hearing about this in the past, yes. What Zeldin's saying here is that it's not just transfers. I've actually found criminality, and that's why I was able to refer it to the DOJ. Folks, my gut, and this is what this looks like. We could take down the whole Democrat Party for a generation if we can trace this money, if we can at least explain to people how it moves and how they defraud America. Folks, this explains all of it. Remember the Democrats' top priority in that roughly last year that Joe Biden was president was getting that expansion, that radical expansion of the IRS through that would have doubled the size of the workforce? Yeah. And remember what they were going to ultimately do. Janet Yellen, Treasury Secretary for Biden, admitted, well, we said we were going after millionaires and billionaires, but we're actually not. We're going after the middle class. And remember what they did for the first time, forced PayPal, Venmo, all of those services to turn over tax receipts to the federal government. Folks, they had learned they could raid the Treasury to their heart's content, and they wanted to make sure no one, nowhere, including some guy driving an Uber, could possibly hide any money from them and their friends. Well, thanks to the big, beautiful bill, that IRS expansion and a second bill, they did it in two waves, was stopped. Now, before you get frustrated, why has this taken so long? The Democrats went to court to keep their money, and a federal judge initially blocked Zeldin's efforts and allowed groups access to the money. They finally appealed it, and the three-judge panel just sided with the EPA. Stephen Miller, Trump's deputy chief of staff, described it this way, what they're seeing behind the scenes.
But what we found since President Trump came into office is that the Democrats have set up a system to funnel hundreds of billions and ultimately trillions of dollars to migrants that are in our country, oftentimes from places like Somalia.
Which is, of course, just one angle on the fraud. They're keeping billions for themselves, too. Prediction, folks. By the time this is over, you can see the outlines of this coming. You're going to watch that money move through multiple entities, and it's going to end up inside Act Blue, funding Democrat priorities, Democrat groups, along with the Chinese Communist Party money that's funneled in by Neville Singham. We already know that, thanks to Azra Nomani's reporting at Fox News. Folks, if we can get this information and break through with it before the end of the Trump administration, folks, we can psychologically alter America's relationship with the Democrat Party for a generation. I truly pray for truth, for revelation. Just please let the American people really see before it's too late. Insane thing number three. Al-Qaeda wins its first congressional seat in New Jersey. Adam Hamawi. I hit this hard this week on my show, so forgive me if you've heard it, but it's important because our site is not really getting the reporting done on this. Adam Hamawi worked for something called the Benevolence International Foundation in the early 90s in Bosnia. What is the Benevolence International Foundation? Well, I'm looking at it right now on the OFAC list on treasury.gov, the United States Treasury, their website. It's a specially designated global terrorist group by the U.S. Department of the Treasury. And it's also sanctioned by the United Nations Security Council because of its associations with Al-Qaeda. What do they say? No, it's just a front for funneling money to Al-Qaeda. and providing financial assistance to armed jihadis in regions like Chechnya and Bosnia. He worked for it. When I was running down this with my husband the other day, his mouth's just like hanging open. He said, I wonder if that guy's ever seen an execution. Bet he has. Because when he got done doing that, he came to the United States of America and served as the chauffeur and translator for the blind sheikh. You know, the guy who was sentenced to prison and ultimately died there for his role in the assassination of a rabbi and in the first World Trade Center bombing, which killed six, including a pregnant woman. Yep, they road tripped all throughout the Middle East together and America. And what the blind sheikh did was exhort his followers, and a lot of them, to violent jihad, even suggesting specific plots. He very much wanted to blow up the World Trade Center, which is why he was convicted of blowing up the World Trade Center. Incredibly, Hamawi would go on to serve as a defense witness. He testified on behalf of the blind sheikh as a character witness. He was a great guy. Here's the stunning section of the transcript that should have kept this guy not just out of Congress, but out of the country, because he's Egyptian born. Did you hear, this is the prosecutor, did you hear defendant Abdel Rahman, that's the blind sheikh, talk about how America is the enemy of Islam? Yes. And you heard about how Israel is the enemy of Islam, correct? Yes. Did you hear about how Muslims had to do jihad against the enemies of Islam? He responds, of course. That's what he always talked about. He talked about jihad, you know. Folks, this guy served in the army. How on earth was he ever allowed in the country? What kind of vetting do we have? And then serves in the army? Finally, I want to play for you the most chilling darn thing I've heard this week. So Hamawi wins the Democrat primary in his New Jersey district. And because it's a heavily Democrat district, he's all but guaranteed to go to Congress now. Listen to how he opened his victory speech at his campaign headquarters.
We win!
When we organize,
we win!
Check beer!
Allahu Akbar!
Check beer!
Allahu Akbar!
Check beer!
Allahu Akbar!
You've been here since the 1990s, and that's the music you play. Folks, it's really worth watching that video because, like, a bunch of the people in the audience are clearly Muslim. They're wearing burqas and that kind of thing. So they're yelling Allahu Akbar. Standing next to them are clearly non-Muslim white liberals who look just for a moment uncomfortable once the Allahu Akbar starts, but they chime in. Fools. Folks, it's becoming absolutely desperately obvious that we need to pass Nancy Mace's bill to bar people who are not born in America from holding congressional seats, because the Democrats are clearly bent on electing terrorists. I mean, what are we going to have, folks? An Al-Qaeda caucus in Congress? An ISIS caucus in Congress? Naturally, what would you think the Al-Qaeda candidate, a guy who legitimately worked for a terror group, would want to do when he got to Congress? Disable all of America's defenses, of course, and the U.S. military, because it was announced 2 weeks ago, as we know, that the Trump administration has assassinated, has killed over 880 ISIS and Al-Qaeda targets. So naturally, he's going to be really hot to disassemble the military. But he's the first to propose that. Folks, you know, on this podcast, I've been talking, screaming about, we should be running ads on this, but we have no war room and no strategy, so we're not, how Democrats have moved from defund ICE to, okay, defund Customs and Border Patrol too, so we won't have any protection on the border, to, heck, why not? Let's defund the whole Department of Homeland Security. Adam Hamawi, of course, supports all that, but on Hassan Piker's podcast, he went a step further. He wants to defund the military. Because of course he does.
You know, I talk about healthcare, not bombs. I talk about abolish ICE. So healthcare, not bombs means Medicare for all. And not bombs means we need to address our foreign policy. And we need to look at the military industrial complex, take it apart, and really see what we need. We are spending $1 trillion on our defense / Department of War / Department of War Crimes now. And what we need to do is spend that in healthcare and spend it in education. We need to abolish ICE. And so not only do we need to, you know, abolish it, but we need to dismantle the DHS completely. So I want to go further because...
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Insane thing number two. Graham Plattner, y'all, or rather, after the stunning revelations this week that he knew the whole time it was a Nazi tattoo that he had tattooed on his chest, so a former girlfriend tells the New York Times, and she even says, look, I didn't know it was a Nazi tattoo. He called it my Totenkopf. Well, of course, as we know, the Totenkopf was not just the symbol of the Nazis. It was a symbol of the SS. You know, the great guys who ran those concentration camps, killed millions of people. And she said he liked it because they were killers. Now, if you listen to this podcast or my show, you've known about this for a while because CNN busted him in a separate comment. It was about a month and a half ago. And he's on a, you know, comment section, and he's commenting on the Totenkopf, and he's, you know, basically writing that he knows it's a Totenkopf. He knows what it is, which means he's always known what the symbol he tattooed on his chest and wore for 18 years was. Now, that's not the insane thing. No. The insane thing is how hard the media has tried up until now to cover this all up. And folks, if it was pre-Elon Musk owns Twitter, they probably would have gotten away with lying and brushing it off and calling it a right-wing conspiracy. But when 60 million Americans go on X every day, and they're not the same ones either, by the way, because you can so easily share posts off of X and then the rest of them are just on TikTok. Well, and they're seeing this stuff too. You can't hide it. They tried, though. And what does that tell you? Democrats were perfectly happy. So was the Democrat media with electing an actual Nazi as long as he could win. But the second he became a liability, they had to pivot back to their least favorite option, telling the truth and trying to take him out with actual reporting. But none of that's the insane part. No. The insane part is that after all of that came out, AOC and Bernie Sanders still standing by him. No matter that both of them have called Trump and his supporters Nazi, Hitlerian, over and over and over.
It seems to be a daily ritual now where the Democratic lawmakers come out of the Capitol and they're asked about Graham Plattner. This is how it went for Bernie Sanders and AOC on Thursday.
What's your response to this New York Times article on Graham Plattner? Do you think he deserves to continue to be the main Senate nominee?
Oh, this all kind of just came out. I've been doing legislative business on the floor, so I need to dig into everything further before commenting on it. Yeah, because I think this reporting just recently came out, so I just want to make sure that I am fully read up on it before.
Now, that is instructive. After, and she's seen the whole thing. She knows about it. After all of that is reported, and it's clear this guy's a Nazi fanboy, a Nazi wannabe, why wouldn't she just, you know, pull her endorsement? Why won't Bernie? Because she knows her base. They're socialists. And there is a massive and growing intersection among the socialist branch wing of the Democrat Party and the Nazi wing of the Democrat Party. Let me explain. See, the thing nobody's talking about is why Graham Plattner was able to, total unknown, with no money, was able to blast by Janet Mills, the relatively popular governor of Maine in that Democrat primary. He campaigned with his son, Piker. He went on Piker's podcast. Piker is famous, and I'm not going to recap all the examples here because I've put them on previous podcasts, for calling for the assassination of Trump multiple times and violent armed insurrection. He does it all the time. Piker campaigned with Graham Plattner, and Piker's podcast is one of the biggest on Twitch. So he's been on there a bunch. That's how powerful Hassan Piker is. He's become a kingmaker. He's also a communist in the Democrat Party. What you just heard there from Bernie and AOC is fear, because they know there's an absolute National Socialist nexus among the socialist wing of the party. What do I mean by National Socialists? Well, the original name for the Nazis. Think about this for a minute. What made Graham Plattner so popular with that Democrat wing that he surged ahead of Janet Mills in that main Democrat primary? Well, you know, and we really need to look at this because we're so busy talking about the tattoo. We need to look at what made him popular because that's even more important. He's talked about armed revolution. He's talked about how he's a member of the Maine Rifle Club. I'm sorry, Maine Socialist Rifle Club, who on their website says their goal is armed revolution. He's talked about how he's a communist, but most importantly, he's talked about how he's an Antifa super soldier. Now, why is that important? A lot of Americans think Antifa started here. It's some kind of Democrat thing. It didn't. It's actually been in Germany for decades before it came here. And what are they? Armed street thug socialists who have really these sort of remnants, this gloss of the Nazi ideology. And so that is rife throughout the Democrat Party. That is why you're seeing this massive surge of anti-Semitism in the Democrat Party. AOC and Bernie know their base, and they're afraid to alienate the wing Graham Plattner came from, because he's not the only one. In fact, there's a ton of them. He's just the most popular one right now. Again, our side better wake the heck up about this. This movement is not small. It is armed. It is dangerous. A great example of it is Benjamin Song, who, along with his gang of Trantifa, were recently sentenced to an average of 20 years in prison for opening fire on that ICE facility. Now, they shot a cop. Thank God he lived. But thank God they weren't better shots. Of course, they're not, because they're liberals, or they would have gunned the place down. Folks, this kind of group is absolutely ascendant in the Democrat Party.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Insane thing number one, Trump's Iran policy, which is either insane or crazy like a fax, or both. 2 weeks ago, Iran bombed our bases in Iraq. We still haven't released casualty reports. It's still classified. Then they turned around and bombed our bases, or tried to anyway, in Kuwait. Then they blew up the Kuwaiti airport, injuring 60 and killing one. In response, we turned around. Watch this carefully. Watch what we blow up in response to whatever Iran's doing. In response, among other things, we blew up a radar facility. Why in Hades does Iran still have a radar facility with which to target our troops? And the answer is the one I keep playing for you. Trump's admitted it. Now, he took out 70% of the targets. I let them keep the rest.
Is it accurate to say you think the combat operations are over and done? But
no, I didn't say that. I said they are defeated, but that doesn't mean they're done. We could go in for two more weeks and do every single target. We've done probably 70% of them, but we have other targets that we could conceivably hit.
If you look at what Trump is actually doing in the Middle East right now, not what he says, but what he's doing, and you do it without emotion, he has allowed Iran to remain armed. He wants them to remain armed. Don Teichert, former Middle East attaché on Fox News, admitted this week. He said, look, we just did basic military operations. Iran hasn't been defanged.
So you think drop the ceasefire, finish off the target list?
Jesse, I actually think that the first 6 weeks of operations against Iran were at the operational level, that we never really focused our strikes on the heart of the regime. And I think once President Trump realizes that Iran is going to continue to act and negotiate in bad faith, then now we take the strikes to the heart of the regime, the things that keep them in power, the things they value most. And I think that changes the strategic calculus and returns the initiative to us.
Of course, that's not new to you. I've played General Jack Keane many times saying, look, we got 2 weeks of bombing left. We desperately need to finish it. In fact, about an hour ago, Keane went on Fox News and point blank said, we have got to return to full combat. They can't just run around the Middle East blowing up airport ports. You know why? Because eventually they're going to hit the Saudi oil fields. Keane sounded almost desperate. So understand something, folks. When you look at facts, and they're stubborn things, Donald Trump has, by his own admission, deliberately left Iran with enough firepower to keep the strait shut down. And then acted like he's desperate. And it is an act because he's not desperate to get some kind of deal with Iran. And whatever they do, he just lets them blow through his red line and says it's okay. That situation hit such a peak of absurdity that by last weekend, the Iranian parliament speaker, Mohammad Khalilbaf, former commander of the IRGC Air Force, bragged, quote, and he's not wrong, we get concessions, not through talks, but through missiles. He actually tweeted this, quote, in negotiations, we only clarify them. And then they proceeded to do the bombing of our base, of the airport, to which Trump simply shrugged his shoulders and said, oh, well, you know. He then cussed out Netanyahu for wanting to respond to the civilian bombing by Hezbollah, which is one of Iran's proxies, screamed bloody murder at him for responding, but not at Hezbollah, cut a peace deal with Hezbollah to stop bombing, announced it, and then an hour later, they bombed Israel again. Okay, there's no way in Trump's right mind he could possibly think he could cut a deal with these people. Because by the end of the week, the stuff Trump was saying was so absurd, it was either completely delusional or laugh out loud funny. Here's Trump being asked about the ceasefire when all Iran does is violate the ceasefire, again, including in an attempt to kill our troops.
How do you define ceasefire?
Pretty much the way it is. It's a different part of the world. You know, I'd say in that part of the world, ceasefire is when you're shooting in a more moderate manner.
That's not exactly funny if you're the parents of one of our troops on one of those bases. So he outrageously blasts Israel for retaliating when Iran's proxies hit civilian areas, but shrugs his shoulders when Iran fires at us and all of that. Folks, I know this. He's not stupid. One of two things is going on here. His ego has potentially surpassed his common sense, and he wants a signature on the Abraham Accords so badly, because that truly would be historic, that he's willing to let Iran do pretty much whatever he wants, they want. And by the way, he even let them know this week, this was an outrage. He let them know this week saying, look, I'm not going to restart the Iran war unless you kill our troops. That's significant, because it means Iran can injure our troops in these strikes. Again, keep in mind, for the Iraqi base, they still have not declassified the injury report. Normally they do. They haven't. Why? Because I guarantee our troops were injured in that one. So he's saying to Iran, you can even injure our troops if you want, but you can't kill them. That is a total turnaround from the way, the amazing and beautiful and wonderful way he fought that war for the first 6 weeks. Then we learn another completely bizarre thing this week. Do you remember when about a week ago, a report briefly broke, Bloomberg had it, that Operation Freedom was up and operating? Folks, all we'd have to do to open the strait is just do Operation Freedom. Bomb the rest of the Iranian targets, you know, the missile launchers, the, you know, the radar, all of that stuff that he acknowledges they still have, and then escort tankers through. It'd bring oil prices right down. The oil would flow right back through. Well, a story broke last week from Bloomberg that they had resumed Operation Freedom. And CENTCOM itself denied that. Pentagon said, nope, nope, we haven't. Well, it then broke this week that they lied. Think about this for a minute. They lied. They had been doing it on a limited basis. In fact, the Navy had escorted over about a 3 week period, 70 cargo ships through the strait. They skirted the coast of Oman, and our ships and the cargo ships had to turn off their transponders so as not to be, detected by Iran. Well, that's just, I mean, idiocy. Why? Because we let them keep their radar centers the whole time, and we're hiding from them. In other words, this is a play game. Don't take out Iran's capabilities, and then sneak ships through, but don't let the markets know you can do it. Because, folks, The fact they got those 70 ships through without a scratch means there's a viable route through the strait. Why would you lie about that and keep it secret? I mean, talk about calming the markets, right? Why would you keep that a secret from the markets? The only conceivable reason that you could do it is you're trying to save Iran from embarrassment so you can get this Abraham Accords, which personally, folks, I think is useless. Yes, it would be historic to officially end the Arab-Israeli wars. Cool, but it's not going to matter because there'll be a whole new Middle Eastern war because you've let Iran off the hook and let them run around. It's just not going to matter. It'll be a nice headline for a day. No one's going to remember it. But folks, think about this for a minute. Who's hurt by Iran, honestly, acting almost as a proxy of Donald Trump? They're not answering to him, but they're doing the bombing. They're keeping the strait closed. Who is benefiting? Okay, well, where do those oil tankers go? Here, we're filling them up. And every day that goes by with that strait closed solidifies those new supply chains. And folks, right now, what we're doing, we're running flat out. We are producing at 100% barrels of oil. We are churning out every barrel of oil that we conceivably can. Also, our refineries are running at absolute 100% capacity because we're taking in that oil, too, for refining. Don't forget, we've opened those, you know, Gulf of America facilities that had been closed because China got the oil, that viscous oil from Venezuela. We used to process it. And then the Chinese got it for a discount because it was sanctioned. Stupid us. So Congress literally is making sure that China gets discounted oil that we don't have and then eventually just didn't come to our refineries anymore and they shut down. So we're having the light sweet crude, the viscous oil that is coming in for refining. And folks, given that I know that, I can't wait to see the GDP number when it comes out next, because remember, for the first 4 years of the Trump administration, every quarter, what was the largest chunk of economic activity? A lot of people think it was tech or something. No, it's the minerals and mining category, which includes oil, natural gas, rare earth minerals, and stuff like that. So you're gonna get a GDP boom here. What else are you going to do? Well, this oil coming in here, both for, you know, they're buying our oil, but also bringing oil in to refine. So our oil's going out, it's coming in. What is it going to do? It's going to give a massive multi-billion-dollar shot in the arm to the oil companies so that they can build the infrastructure they need to quickly get the refineries and the oil, you know, the drilling capacity up. In other words, the hard infrastructure, the stuff you need to show revenue and oil flow and sales to get the loans for. That way, Trump does not have to go to Congress for it like he did this week, you know, the $700 billion to reopen the coal facilities that Obama shut down for no damn reason. And then again, just pure economic activity, shot in the arm for GDP. And again, all of this is being sold in dollars. What does that do? Strengthen the dollar to tamp down inflation. He really needs to tamp down inflation because we're printing the big, beautiful bill right now. Remember, the largest spending package in U.S. history. We don't have anywhere near the revenue to do that in the budget. We have to print it. That'll jack up inflation. But Trump is playing one heck of a dangerous game, because remember why this war started. It started 4 days after Iran and China announced a deal for Iran to buy supersonic missiles. In other words, missiles that could take out one of our destroyers. We had to get in there and kill the place before that could happen. Now, it takes more than just a missile to knock out our destroyer. You got to get around its defenses. You need satellites. You need targeting. You need radar. They're going to need Chinese help to do it. But that doesn't mean they can't do it. So every day that goes by, we're seeing these reports, Foreign Affairs, all of these outlets, that China is rearming Iran over the land, particularly over train routes. And it gets more dangerous for our troops and for everybody out there every single day. Look, they already tried to kill our troops this week, as I said, on that base in Kuwait. They're going to try to get a kill, and eventually they will. And folks, if they were to manage to blow a hole in one of our destroyers, or God forbid, sink it, or do something on that magnitude, another terrifying scenario is them, you know, destroying parts of the Saudi oil fields. I mean, take 15 years to reconstitute. You could end up with a worldwide recession over that kind of thing. So this is a breathtaking risk that he's taking, if that's what he's doing. And every day that passes, ups the odds that China and Iran are going to get hit, because get a hit in on us. Because remember, China did all the targeting for the bases, our bases that they hit in the beginning of the war. They killed 7 of our troops. Those kids are in the ground. I'm not going to lie to you, folks. This could end very badly. But who else is hurt here? A group, I'd argue, is the enemy. France, the UK, Germany. Because guess what? Natural gas ain't flowing through the strait. Neither is oil, refined, unrefined oil, none of it. And by the way, remember also that 15% of, say, France's natural gas goes through that strait. It's not moving. Also odd this week, folks, and this is a major play, right or wrong, by Trump to completely upend the board in the entire world. Don't forget this. Exxon came out this week and said, look, we're about 2 weeks away. It's going to be about a week and a half now from us seeing $150, $160 a barrel oil. Why? Because up until now, we've been rating our strategic reserve of oil, but we're not the only one. Countries all over the world are doing it. And Exxon and other oil companies warned, you know, 5-6 weeks ago that they only had about 5-6 weeks supply to keep the prices tamped down. And that sometime in the next 2 weeks, they claim they're going to go through the roof. And you're going to see the true price right now that is not cushioned by the release of those, you know, supplies. So Trump's on borrowed time right now, but doesn't seem to care about that. Is he willing to let oil go to $150, $160 a barrel? Is Exxon lying? They're not the only ones who said it. Because folks, at $150, $160 a barrel, because we've been hovering like, you know, $95 to $110 right now, and that's been bad. You're talking about a worldwide economic recession at that point, if it goes to that. So it's either not true and Exxon's gigging us, or I don't know what the next couple of weeks is going to hold. Fascinating times, y'all. Fascinating times. Have a great rest of the weekend. And remember, what is our enemy? Iran? China? Sure. But I mean, personally, boredom. I hate boredom. I can't stand not to have a podcast in my ear as I'm doing the boring stuff. You know, chopping up vegetables, filling the gas tank, you know, going shopping, in my husband's case, mowing the lawn. Remember the Battleground America podcast, because it's a great way to catch up on everything important from the week that was. So enjoy the rest of the weekend.
With Tara Servatius. Please subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Share with friends, family, and other free thinkers. Thanks for listening.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.